So with that, we bring in Corey Geiger from Altoona. Corey, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, I appreciate it. It's been part of my adult life for 20 years, so I was able to work out a deal with the Altoona. I don't work for the Altoona Mirror any longer full-time, as people may or may not know, but they have me covering the curve this year.
And by the way, nice article on the junior announcer who's at Penn State, is part of the Belisario College Communications. That was a nice article on him.
Steve, this is, you know, I've covered the curve for 20 years. I've written 3 books on the curve, thousands of stories. The article on Preston Shoemaker is unique, really one of the more memorable I've ever written. He's from Hollidaysburg, right down the road. Yep. He used to go to curve games. His dad tells a story. He's 2 years old, and he recognizes all the players on the team when their faces come up on the video board. He's the first local kid that's ever become a broadcaster here. And we have had great, great success with broadcasters coming through Altoona for the curve. So really an interesting story. And he spoke nothing but great about the broadcast journalism program at Penn State. They do such a tremendous job there.
I think one of the curve announcers is now Virginia Tech's guy. Does that sound right?
John Lazor.
I went down to Virginia Tech in December to do basketball, I talked to John about that. So it was great to see him.
Yeah, Rob Egan is a Triple A general manager. Dombach was president of the Spikes. Mike Passanese works for the San Francisco Giants. Dan Van Grilli does pregame for the Pirates. I mean, the list of broadcasters here is pretty impressive.
It is. All right, the governor is going to kick the number up to 75% starting on Monday for outdoor gatherings, and then to 100% on May 31st. For the curve, what kind of difference maker can this be for them, both the short term for 2 weeks and also then long term after that?
Dollar bills, yo.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. It's money. Look, they lost a lot of money last year. Minor league franchises around the country lost a lot of money. Minor league baseball is all about getting fans there, because that is the vast, vast majority of your revenue. And so to be able to have more fans in the stands is more resources. It's just so different than a lot of the other things that we talk about Penn State with Penn State football, Steelers, Major League Baseball. Sure, all of these places, you know, require fans for money, but they can get a ton of money through TV. Well, minor league baseball doesn't get a cent in TV, and so the entire entity is dependent on people showing up to the ballpark, or there is no minor league baseball. So right now it's 2,300 is the maximum the curve can get. It'll tick up with the 75%, as you mentioned. Then June 8th, they can have essentially 100%. They're not quite 100% because they've got to have some extra space away from the dugout. So they'll lose a couple hundred seats maybe. But starting June 8th, they could conceivably sell out. And a sellout can be worth, Steve, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for a minor league franchise. And people think, oh, well, you know, these teams probably make a lot of money anyway. They don't. Most minor league franchises might make between $300,000 and $750,000 a year as profit. That's it. We're not talking, you know, major businesses here.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're I would say maybe the most profitable minor league franchise is probably Sacramento.
Yep.
Which has always drawn well. But, of course, you know, they didn't, you know, except for, I think they were the outpost for the A's last year. So, you know, I think, didn't Altoona get at least a little bit of money from Pittsburgh just to have it as the training outpost? A little bit.
They did. And there are a few teams that, this is a year old when I looked at these numbers, there are a few teams out there that might be in the $2 million, a little bit more range in terms of profit. But when there were 160 teams, and there aren't any more, there's only 120, when there were 160, I think I calculated somewhere around 130 of them made less than $500,000, 600, whatever the number. I mean, it is not a large amount of money. So that's the money aspect.
Right.
But still, just getting people in the ballpark. You guys know in State College with the spike, when the ballpark is filled, it is such a sense of community pride and a social outreach for everybody. People aren't necessarily watching the game a whole lot. They're there to socialize with their friends and family.
Right. No, it is. It is socialization is a big, big part of minor league baseball. There's no question about that. So the weather has been, I mean, for example, I'm out last night watching my 5-year-old grandson play T-ball, and it was cold. Okay. I'll admit it was chilly out last night. So the weather's been a mixed bag. So how have they drawn so far with the limit of 2,300?
They've gotten 2,300, I think, twice, and they rained out once. And so the other ones were, you know, less. I don't know exactly what they reported. I think it's been less than 2,000 people actually in the ballpark. But that's typical for April and May. The biggest difference between, obviously, a full-season team and what the spikes were starting in June is teams never sell in April and May. Sometimes there are franchises, you know, that I'll mention Erie for one. Erie was perfectly suited as a short season franchise.
Agreed.
Back in the day, starting in June. Well, in '99, they joined Double A, as did Altoona, and the weather is miserable in Erie in April and May. So all you really get as a full season franchise is more games. You don't get more money. You just get more games that you have to put on, which gives you a chance to make money. But those April and May games, Steve, they're always tough draws in the Eastern League. It really kind of starts around late May, and then things take off in June with a lot of bigger crowds.
This has been a spot where careers have started to take off because the Double A level, the quality of baseball is just better because it's been whittled down at that point. So what are you seeing in the early going? Are there a couple of guys that you look at and say, you know what, they might have something to them? Who would that be?
Well, they had a kid throw 6 no-hit innings last night. He's a 21-year-old right-hander named Rolandzy Contreras. Mm-hmm. They got him from the Yankees earlier this year in a trade for Jameson Taillon. So in Contreras' first start, he struck out 11, which was a career high. Curve lost that game. He got no decision. And then last night he was perfect for 5 2/3 innings until he walked a relief pitcher, Steve. But he struck out 11 as well, tied his career high again, 6 no-hit innings, and then departed after 70 pitches. The Curve threw a one-hitter last night. It was pretty impressive. But they're playing a bad team, and offense, if you think offense is bad in the major leagues right now, Steve, it's really bad in the minor leagues as guys get used to it. But he is a good pitcher. O'Neill Cruz is a 6'7" shortstop. He'll never play shortstop every day in the major leagues.
But no question.
That's what he's playing now. He'll be an outfielder, but he is a very, very good prospect. A guy named Mason Martin hit 35 home runs a couple years ago in A ball. He's here. And they got a guy named Rodolfo Castro, who actually played a game in the big leagues earlier this year. So it should be a really good Curve team. But what I'm really interested to see, Steve, and I know you enjoy baseball, what is minor league baseball going to be without short season and rookie leagues? What changes will it make? How will it impact the way rosters are put together, the way teams send players up to Double A, how long it takes them to get to Double A, how long they're in Double A before? See, we knew all that. We had a good handle on how everything worked at the Double A level, you know, based on the old system. Now with this new system, you know, I've been in minor league baseball for 25 years, and I can sit here and tell you, I don't really know what Double A baseball is going to look like right now.
I think this is going to be a pure guess on my part. I think you're going to have more rushing of people to get to the majors in this current system. And this is my reasoning is simple: money. These, you know, they can get all of these players, quote, on the cheap at the major league level, and there's no incentive to offer them a second contract.
Wait a minute. You telling me that the Pirates don't have enough money to pay major league players?
No, they have enough money to have ski resorts.
Yeah, well, look, what you just described, I compare it to Russell Wilson, the Russell Wilson dynamic in football.
Sure, third round pick. Yep.
Yeah, you get the quarterback, you win with him before you have to pay him. I think Russell Wilson has changed the game of football and the way we view all these quarterbacks.
Sure.
You got to make a decision in a year or two. Well, minor league baseball, this is the way the Pirates operate in minor league baseball. They've got to get you there early enough so that they can find out about you. And if they wanted to give you a contract extension, they need to do it before you get explode good enough. I mean, Andrew McCutchen was the prime example. They gave him 6 years, $51 million.
Right.
If he'd have waited a year or two, he could have gotten $150 million.
Right.
Andrew McCutchen gave them the hometown discount, probably cost himself at least $75 million.
Yeah.
So they've tried to do that with guys like Gregory Polanco, Jose Tabata back in the day.
Starling Marte.
That's their plan. If they can get you up there by 25 and get you into that second contract, as opposed to the way the Cardinals always did things. I would talk about this with Joe Putnam. Shoot, Steve, the Spikes would have a bunch of 24-year-olds on their roster.
They would.
There were years where the Spikes were older than the curve, believe it or not, which was just bizarre.
I know. And you might find that in the MLB draft league, that they might be older than some of the single-A teams.
Yeah, good point. That's a real good point.
They're going to be older than some of the single-A teams because that's where you're going to find the 18-, 19-year-old draft choice. That's where you're going to find them. The money part is, and you're right, I've talked about this a million times in the show about Russell Wilson. They were able to get other free agents because he was playing on a third-round deal. That's why you see teams drafting quarterbacks and overvaluing them. Because the New York Jets are sitting there today saying, we've got a 5-year window with Zach Wilson on a rookie deal. That's it. Once they make the big money, they can't make the moves.
I hate it. I hate it. They've got to find out about these. They not only have to find out about them, they give up on these guys in a year and a half. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous. You know, Ben Roethlisberger, well, he wasn't the first, but really he was one of the first to actually have to play a whole lot as a rookie.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers got to sit for a few. Everybody throughout NFL history has been able to sit for a year or two and learn.
Yep.
Now, if you haven't figured it out by game two or three or four of your second year, we're moving on. We're just done with you. And the Steelers is very interesting with Mason Rudolph. Do we know that Mason Rudolph couldn't be the heir apparent? Well, most Steelers fans have long given up on Mason Rudolph, but you know, quite frankly, he because he didn't play all that well along with Duck Hodges when Ben was hurt a year and a half ago, people give up on Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph 20 years ago would really not even be getting to play until just yet.
Right. Well, and they gave him a 1-year deal. I mean, you got a year deal. Very quickly, media had an opportunity to see. I don't know if you went to both practices. Did you go to both?
I did. Yep.
Okay. What was your just general thought now that they've hit the quote off season?
I thought the receivers were good. I mean, a deep receiving core too. We know about John Dodson and Parker Washington, but I think that they've got some really good young receivers, which you have to have. You got to have guys to catch a ball if you're going to be putting it up a whole bunch. I didn't think Sean Clifford looked all that good in the first one. Much better, you know, much more under control in the second one. Taquan Roberson looks really good running the ball, scrambling, and being able to make a play.
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty inconsistent throwing the ball. And so my primary takeaway, Steve, is I'm still not certain that the backup quarterback is on the roster. I still think they could go get somebody maybe out of the portal that could ultimately end up being the backup, simply because if you're the 10, 12 team in the country, if something happens with Clifford, can you beat these people they've got to beat with Taquan Roberson? And I don't know that, and I don't know if they could with somebody in the portal, but that's just I just think there's a pretty significant drop-off from what I saw from Clifford to Roberson.
It is always a pleasure, my friend. It's great to have you back with us.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoy your day, pal.